You mentioned earlier that it's one of those iconic fixtures. Is it one of those games that when you were deciding whether or not to become the manager here that you looked at and wanted to be part of?
Not really.
And don't you just love Brendan Rodgers? Wasn't that absolutely fantastic? So hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this week I'm going to be chatting to Hull Boy, but first some more Brendan.
No, I wanted to be a part of Celtic. Being the manager here every day is a huge privilege and an honour for me. And whatever game it was, I was always going to be proud, whether it's Celtic Rangers, Celtic Aberdeen, Celtic Alloa. For me, there's a huge honour in being the manager here.
So I'm joined by Hull Boy and we discuss briefly, my my appearance on Radio Scotland, but it's not really what we're discussing. Discussing the surreal conversation I had with a couple of Rangers fans before we went on. Then we go and talk about the game itself, Hull Boy's predictions on what team we're going to put out and formation and scoreline. And then there's a wee bit at the end that just reminds you why we are dealing with Rangers Football Club the second and what resulted in the death of Rangers Football Club the first. Once again, we've got new music featuring on the site. Oh, this is Watermelon Man by a band called Anthology, who were originally based in Somerset, formed over a decade ago to make some charity money for their friend Tom, who unfortunately passed away after suffering from leukemia at age just 14. They've since continued raising money for cancer and leukemia in children charity Click Sergeant, and been selling some CDs, etc. I'm sure they'll be delighted to find themselves on the Celtic Underground podcast, and they will also be on at the end after the Omni Shambles, and they will be playing Mustang Sally. Anyway, enough of me. There will be information about the Celtic FC Foundation again at the end of the podcast, and some podcast recommendations that you guys have been sending in thick and fast. Anyway, hope you enjoyed Brendan. Hope you're going to enjoy the game. And I hope you enjoy this chat with me and Mr. Hull Boy. So I'm joined by Hull Boy. How's the Yorkshire Riviera today?
Very good, actually, Harry. I think we're getting a bit of an Indian summer, just like a lot of other places. So it's been very good weather recently, and I think it's going to be good weather up there for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, it will be. So, talking about tomorrow's game, are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I always look forward to every Celtic game. We've started the season absolutely brilliantly, domestically, Brendan's got the team playing really exciting football, and we're obviously scoring a lot of goals. So, yeah, obviously looking forward to tomorrow.
So, here's a question about tomorrow. I sort of know the answer, but I'm asking it for the purposes of the listener. Does the whole new club, old club matter?
I mean, there's obviously a bit of a debate that's been going on in the build-up to tomorrow's game about whether it matters or not. And I think, for me personally, it probably doesn't matter when the game gets going, but actually there are some points of principle that I just think should be clarified by all of the Scottish football authorities, all of the clubs who play in Scotland, and actually put this thing to bed. So for me, yes, it does matter. Yes, there's still that kind of rivalry, but I just think that factually, things should have been clarified and set out. And I think probably what frustrates a lot of people is that it isn't the football authorities staying silent on the issue. It's that they've actually gone out of their way in some individuals' cases to actually argue the absolute opposite of the factual reality.
Do you know,
so people like Neil Doncaster, for instance, you know, who has been asked direct questions about the new club, old club scenario, you know, and kind of insists that it's the same club, and it's an absolutely ridiculous, factually incorrect statement to make.
Well, talking of factually incorrect, Steve, so I was going to do this at the end of the podcast, but I'll do it at the beginning. So, some people will know I was on Sports Sound last night with along with Celtic Rock and Rollers and two Rangers fans. So, we met in the BBC reception.
Wait a minute, though. If you name dropping, can we just say that Saint was in the New York Times this week?
I know Saint was in the New York Times, and I'm going to be putting something in about that as well. See these.
I think that trumps your sports sound.
I will match your sports sound and raise you a New York Times.
Absolutely. Anyway, on you go.
Yeah, so we're chatting in reception, but maybe I feel a bit like telling tales out of school here. But we're chatting in reception, but and one of the Rangers fans turns to the other one and says, sounds like a joke the way I'm setting this up. One Rangers fan turns to the other and says, do you know exactly what the format is? And the guy says, yeah, they just want us to, no political stuff. And I'm thinking, what's political? But I have an understanding as to what Rangers fans will consider political, which is anything that deviates from their false narrative, probably in their heads. So I'm right, okay. They just want us to talk about past games, or past memories of past games. And I, you know, that way, I just couldn't help myself. I had a wee smile and I said, well, that won't be hard because there's only been two.
And, yeah.
And one of them, now, see if somebody had said it with a smile. I deliberately put a smile on my face to illustrate I'm just doing the wind-up. I probably, in the reverse situation, would have said, aye, very good, right, okay, let's chat when we're in there, or something. But the guy said, oh, here we go.
Yep.
This nonsense again. What's nonsense? This liquidated stuff. I mean, it's just nonsense. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but you went bust. You let your club die. No. We have not gone bust. And I'm thinking he's doing the holding company club garbage. And so I said, no. There was a Rangers Football Club went bust. You went into administration. You didn't come out of administration. You get liquidated. We have not been liquidated. You contact BDO. We have not been liquidated. There are some twists in the tail of this yet. And getting back to your factual comment there. And then, you know, even you, and this is what it must be like trying to debate with Donald Trump in America. You're just thinking, you've just dismissed a fact as nonsense. To trot out nonsense. And yep. So you're sitting there thinking, no, it's pretty yep. straightforward. You went bust. No, we have yep. not been liquidated yet. There are many twists and tails left in this yet. And I said, well, call me a pedant, but I just go by company law. Huh, I don't know what company law you look at. Go and speak to BDO. And I said, well, I don't need to speak to BDO. My company's lawyers are DWF. Who are they? Some sort of wrestling organisation? To which I said, no, they're one of the biggest legal firms in the UK, and they were your lawyers when your company went bust. And they're my company lawyers, and I've had a conversation about, there's no rational discussion about the fact that you're the same club, apart from it's an emotional thing. Oh, and companies can clubs change their name all the time anyway. What are you talking about? Well, you guys, I said, no, are you talking about the fact that Fergus McCann bought Celtic Football and Athletic Company Limited, that had a trading number and a trading history of about 100 years, and then set up Celtic Football Club PLC, and that PLC then took ownership of the shares. So the football club, that's an example of a holding company and a football club. You never had that. At that point, the BBC guy came in to take us away. But you're a man who knows his way around businesses. I'm not crazy. Rangers Football Club in liquidation is the name of the former Rangers Football Club currently at Companies House. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, basically, I think what's happened is that within football, and we know the cliche where people say, oh, football's all about opinions. And I think what people have done is they've allowed that narrative to actually inject opinions into the state of the original Rangers that has been liquidated and the new club. So you only have to listen to the pundits on the phone-ins and on places like Sports Sound, where essentially those people who want to defend this kind of like continuity will say, well, that's my opinion and it's about opinion. Well, actually, it isn't. Because the most basic, simple way to look at this is that the original Rangers were formed in the 1870s. And they became incorporated as a limited company in, I think it was 1899. And at that point, once you become incorporated, there is no separate distinction between the club and the company. So, wind forward to 2012, and at the point that the entity known as Rangers Football Club Limited goes into administration and then subsequently goes into liquidation, that entity is effectively the football club. So anything that came after that is a new entity in entirety, both club and company. You're absolutely right about the Celtic situation. Fergus McCann needed a company vehicle to actually float the club on the stock exchange. And it's completely different. And if you look at the two company vehicles that are effectively now operating the new club Rangers, they've set up a similar model, but they set that up because the original entity went bust. There's no dispute on that.
But patently, I was listening to something the other day. They were talking, the reason I mentioned Donald Trump, they were talking about Donald Trump, and it did remind me of the whole Rangers situation. And they were talking about how Donald Trump is telling lies, and they gave the example. But the problem when somebody tells a lie so forcefully and it's repeated in the media. And if you gave the example of Trump saying that there was people in Queens in New York celebrating on rooftops when the Twin Towers were taken down, and there's video of this went viral across the world of these people celebrating, and it's subsequently that's been disproved that there was no evidence of anybody celebrating, and there's certainly no videos can be found of it. But the point the guy who's talking made is, before Trump made that statement, there was maybe 5% of Americans believe that conspiracy. After Trump makes the statement, even though it's been dismissed as nonsense, roughly 30% of Americans believe that conspiracy. And it was talking about anti-factual era that we're in of people just tell nonsense stories often enough, and when people recount it with the facts, they just dismiss it as, well, that's, I just don't believe that.
Yeah. Well, we saw it in the EU referendum. Who needs experts?
Correct.
So, you know, Why would anybody associated with Rangers or an apologist for them not being a new club, you know, they would say, well, this isn't about experts. This is about me believing that this isn't the same club. So therefore, because I believe it's the same club, it's the same club.
I mean,
it's factually incorrect.
Correct.
But if that gets said time and time again, then people just think, yeah, that's the same.
I mean, I
think what disappoints me, is that, you know, some of the big players in the media, I know that some of them are kind of reviled, but, you know, the Sky Sports of this world, they play this kind of, like, very, very safe, conservative approach, and because they are looking only at the commercial paradigm, they you know, they reinforce the myth that this is... This weekend is all about the old firm being back. It's all about, you know, the same club Rangers being back to play Celtic. Yeah. I don't know. Part of me says, you know, why should I get bothered about this? Which I actually don't get that bothered about it. But it just niggles away at me sometimes that actually, you know, people are just prepared to kind of spout factual inaccuracies to protect their own position, but you know, if anybody's ever talking about this, this is not an issue that is to do with opinions, it's to do with facts.
Mm-hmm. And that's what frustrates me. The fact is Rangers went bust. Now I get the concept that two Rangers fans who turn up at Ibrox to support a team wearing blue, with that badge, called Rangers, emotionally to those people, it is emotionally to them, it is the same club. I get that.
Mm.
But the point I continually make is football's about the joy of the moment and celebrating your club's history. Well, because they cheated, the consequence of that cheating was their club went bust. And so the you know, as any parent will know when they talk to their child, when you're saying, well, unfortunately, that's the consequences of doing a bad thing. The consequence of doing the bad thing is the outcome that you're now dealing with, and the outcome that they're dealing with is they no longer can celebrate their history, in my mind, because they went bust.
Yeah. I think the only thing about this... We should probably move on, but the only time that this is really going to get come to a head or get resolved is at the point that the new Rangers either gets to play in Europe and how their history is defined by UEFA.
Mm-hmm.
And the other time is when they're actually on the verge of winning a major competition, domestic competition, such as the league or the Scottish Cup, and if they then start to trot out the narrative of this is another league title, you know, then, you know, that for me, that is when certain footballing organisations, be it clubs or ruling bodies, should actually say something at that point. And I include Celtic in that.
Yeah, because if in the grand scheme of things, of the fact that both that prior to their demise they'd lasted over a hundred years, and that Celtic are over 100 years old, and we both would like to think there's another, you know, I'd like to think Celtic got another 100 years to go. If all that they suffer as a result of, you know, a Barca boy has tweeted a obviously it's a spreadsheet snapshot of the Rangers' losses in the 15 years, I think it was, prior to liquidation, amounted to something like £180 million in total. And then in liquidation, the expected debt to HMRC is 95 million quid. So the cumulative amount of Rangers cheating is roughly £250 million. If the consequences of cheating for 15 years for £250 million is they get to just be the same club with the fact that they played outside the top flight for four seasons, in the grand scheme of, by the time I'm pushing 100, that was a slap in the wrist. They didn't suffer for 15 years of cheating at £250 million. That's the consequence of it.
Yep.
And as Alec McLeish...
But even at a corporate level, there was no admonishment for some of the directors who've been involved in that directly. So people like Paul Murray and Dave King have just been declared fit and proper.
Great. And in fact, as somebody was saying to me in the last 24 hours, somebody close to the Rangers story of the last wee while, they actually said that there's been some dreadful people at Rangers after David Murray left. They didn't say new and old, but, you know, at Ibrox, that's the easiest way to put it, there's been some dreadful people. And the current board are the worst of the lot. And some of them were there pre-liquidation.
Yep.
And as you say, no admonishment. They're back in. They took a club, went bust, and are back in. And it's the, you know, it's the things that give me a sore head in trying to get an understanding from Rangers fans. This concept of, no, it was the holding company that went bust. This, you know, the weird thing that that then throws up of, the football authorities are right to punish a club that goes into administration, but shouldn't punish a club that goes into liquidation because it's the holding company, not the club. You know, that sort of oxymoron. Or the other thing is, if it's always just the holding company, what is to stop every football club getting some form of line of credit?
Absolutely.
Whacking up to stop Air United deciding to go and borrow £10 million this season to give it a go, fails, fold, and keep playing football under a new holding company?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, if you wound the clock back far enough, and when you saw some of those clubs like Motherwell and Dundee going into administration previously for overstretching themselves, that was exactly the feeling that people took, that they actually said, well, do you know what, we've not got much sympathy with them because they overstretched themselves. Now, they didn't actually go into liquidation. They came out of administration, which meant that they actually stiffed a lot of their creditors, which is obviously what people were happy about.
Yep.
But for some reason, in the case of the Ibrox club, you know, that kind of that moral issue, if you like, of stiffing creditors and leaving them with virtually nothing in terms of pence in the pound repayments, then, you know, that's all been swept under the carpet.
Yeah, and just...
But anyway...
I just find it so frustrating, but it really was irritating last night talking to a Ranger who was coming out with a new one of, they've not actually gone bust, as twists and tails. I think the gist of it is he thinks they're going to be unliquidated, which then would create another issue. So that would mean there'd be two holding companies floating around there. I mean, which one then has responsibility for the football team?
Well, exactly.
What utter nonsense. So back on to Saturday. You said we've started some good football, started playing some good football under Brendan Rodgers. What's your expectation for the team on Saturday?
Well, it's funny because there's a lot of subtle choices, and what I've really enjoyed about Brendan's short time at the club is not just watching the games and thinking, yeah, we're really playing an exciting brand of football now, but actually, and a lot of other people have commented on it, it's actually listening to what Brendan Rodgers has got to say. Mm-hmm. And his interviews are absolutely fascinating, in that I'm not saying he's giving all the game away in terms of some of his thinking, but it is nice to hear, and refreshing to hear somebody actually talking about the football and some of what's in his thinking. And I was struck the other week when he actually made a comment and said, well, actually, we're not always... He didn't say we're not bothered about what the starting 11 is, but he says, I think often in games it's more important to know what our finishing 11 is going to be. And I found that really, really intriguing. And I kind of watched a couple of games after he'd said that, and I think there's no doubt that one of the things that we had missing with Ronnie Dyler was that when he made substitutions, It didn't change games. Whereas I think with Rodgers, I think you're seeing two things with his substitutions. One is that they are changing games, but also because he tends to make the full three substitutions, it's almost as though in stages he's changing a bit of how he wants Celtic to finish the game. So I know there's some injury doubts around Griffiths, so I'll come on to my team shortly, but the thing is, whether he starts with, if Griffiths is fit, whether he starts with Griffiths or not, you know, he may start with Dembele, but if Griffiths is fit, he can then bring him on, and he might think, do you know what, it's better for me for Griffiths to actually finish this game rather than to start it, because of what he perceives might happen in, I don't know, say the final 20 minutes of the game or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I found all that quite fascinating, because I don't think we've had a manager in a good while that clearly sees the team of the day, if you like, not just the starting 11, but ultimately the 14 players who are going to play for him that day. And actually, I mean, I don't know how pre-prepared he is on who his three substitutions are going to be. I mean, obviously, if he gets injuries, or if he thinks that he's got somebody on a yellow card who is at risk of not finishing the game, then that's going to slightly change some of his thinking. But, you know, with a kind of fair wind, he's maybe thinking in advance as to who he's going to start. And again, I mean, there's all the talk today about Griffiths and whether Griffiths is going to be fit, whether he trained or not. I don't know. I wasn't sure whether there's a bit of mind games going on there.
Well, interestingly, the person who's told me that Griffiths was going to be pulled out of the Scotland team before he was, and was 50-50 for the game against Rangers, also then told me last night that Griffiths is definitely playing on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think the reason why I think there is some games going on there is because if Dembele starts, if the news is out that Griffiths is not playing and Dembele is going to start, then I think for the opposition, that might mean that they would pick a particular defensive lineup.
Mm-hmm.
If they then subsequently see when the team sheet comes out that Griffiths is in the starting 11, and they've picked a defensive lineup to cope with the likes of Dembele, or that they think they can cope with the likes of Dembele, I think that's a real starting plus for Celtic, because of all the comments that have been made, the defence of Rangers, and I've seen a couple of games, their defence is, central defenders are woefully slow.
Yeah.
Well, if they think Celtic are going to start with Dembele, they'll take the risk and go with those central defenders and play that. And play a back four, whereas if they knew that Griffiths was playing, they might start with a different starting lineup in terms of a formation to combat the pace of Griffiths, along with Sinclair and whoever else is playing in the Celtic front three.
Well, let me get on to that Celtic front three. We'll do the team backwards for a change, since our biggest threat to them is from there. What would be your front four in total to start the game, assuming everybody's fit?
Well, assuming everybody's fit, I've been having a think about this, because for me, if Griffiths is fit, Griffiths has got to start. And I would also go with Sinclair. I mean, for me, that's just a given. But I think what I would then do is it's then a toss up between Forrest or Roberts. And arguably, you could potentially play both, and then just sit with two kind of more holding midfielders, the likes of Brown and Beaton.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I would have Roberts play at some point. But I think I would probably start with Forrest, Griffiths and Sinclair, and then behind them, I know McGregor's done okay actually, but I then would go with Rogic.
Okay.
And then I would have Brown and Beaton.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just go with that kind of like really really strong back four. Mobile lineup of Lustig, Turi, Sviatchenko, Tierney.
And you wouldn't. You wouldn't play Gamboa?
No. It's too early. It's too early. If you think about it, yeah, he made the transfer deadline, but a lot of the players have been away, so all of the managers. You know, during the training sessions when people are away on international week, they say, "Well, you know, we're doing the best we can with the kind of skeleton squad that we've got, and we just see what people are like when they come back." Well, for me, that's insufficient preparation for Gamboa to be making his debut tomorrow.
Which is one of the other things. We had far more players on international duty than the Rangers did. Do you think that's a disadvantage, an advantage to them, and disadvantage to us?
Well, it's a disadvantage if some of them come back kind of like injured, obviously, or you know, jet lagged or jaded from long journeys. But I mean, Brendan Rodgers said on yesterday, he said, you know, although Rogic was playing, well, Rogic had flown to Australia. But the game that they played was actually played in Dubai, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But effectively, he was back in Glasgow on Wednesday. And Brendan Rodgers said in his press conference that Rogic looked okay. You know, he looked fine. Didn't look jaded. And often he doesn't get back from international games until the Thursday of a week. Now, again, whether Rodgers is just sending out that signal to say, you know, I'm just naming players because it'll put those players in the mind of the opposition management, and might make decisions for them. I don't know.
I'd like to think.
I like.
I was going to say, I'd like to think, with the money that these guys are on, that Rogic could afford to fly business or first class so that he could have a bed on his plane.
Yeah. I don't know whether they do, but I don't know what the travel arrangements are, to be honest with you. It's incredible that they actually do those kind of like length of journeys. Obviously they have to if they're good enough to be playing for their national team, but it does seem a lot of travel.
So you've gone through those players. So the other position is goalkeeper. What are you doing there?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You try and stick by Celtic players and hope that they do well. But I think for me, Craig Gordon lost it a bit last season, as did quite a number of other players. But I don't think Craig Gordon's come back this season and it's, I know it's more difficult to assess a Celtic goalkeeper, but he doesn't seem kind of like reinvigorated in the same way that Scott Brown, James Forrest, people like that appear reinvigorated under Brendan Rodgers. As I say, that's more difficult to assess for a Celtic goalkeeper because they're not involved in the game as much. And surprise, surprise, Craig Gordon's actually saved a penalty this season.
Yeah, I know.
Once. And I think the other thing is that there were a couple of moments in Doris De Vries's debut where he looked a bit edgy with the ball and made a poor clearance. Yeah. And so I think people have kind of leapt on that and said, oh, well, actually, all this talk about Brendan Rodgers wanting him because he knows how he plays and he can play the ball from the back almost as a kind of, you know, some kind of like sweeper role. You know, they're almost kind of judging too soon and saying, oh, well, actually, he can't do that. Therefore, we'll stick with Craig Gordon. I personally don't see that, and I think I would start with De Vries.
Right.
I think Gordon's looked a bit suspect at dead ball situations as well. So I just suspect that, again, Brendan Rodgers knows that De Vries will probably do a better job for him. In that way. The thing that goes in Craig Gordon's favour, if anything, is he's obviously played in these kind of big games, whereas De Vries hasn't. But De Vries has got lots and lots of experience.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only thing that got me was, although there was a period, particularly in the second half against Aberdeen, where they were playing better or had more control of possession, he didn't really have anything to do despite that.
No, exactly right.
So he didn't
exactly
really get
right.
Tested.
And the thing, no. And you're absolutely right. If you look at some of the stats from that game, yeah, the possession count went down from the first half in favour of Celtic, but overall, if you still looked at the 90-minute possession stats, they were huge for Celtic. I think it was 68-69% possession over the full 90 minutes. Well, at that point, that kind of tells you that De Vries isn't really going to be tested that much with a team that's got that, playing for a team that's got that amount of possession.
So you're going with him. So again,
I think the big thing, the big thing for me is having kind of gone with that 11, I'm really torn as to whether Patrick Roberts should start.
Yeah, I mean it's actually an amazing indication of the turnaround with James Forrest. Could you imagine saying anybody in April of last year, we'll play the new Rangers in the first competitive game of September after the transfer window's all finished, and people will probably decide to pick Forrest ahead of Roberts? The first thing you'd say is, we'll pick Forrest to start. Did Roberts leave in the summer? Would be people's first comment. The concept that Forrest would be picked ahead of Roberts. But he's deserved it.
Yeah, and not only that, but I think Forrest has done some. He's done some things in these games. I mean, like the goal that he scored with the outside of his foot was just, you know, it was absolutely sublime run. But the thing is, Forrest has done things in these games. Being more substantial than when Forrest first came on the scene, and everybody was saying, "Wow, here's a player."
Yeah.
Which is so for me, that's why I've gone with Forrest to start. But as I say, even if Forrest starts, I'm absolutely convinced Patrick Roberts will play at some point. Whether that's a direct replacement for Forrest, I don't know. But I think Roberts will play at some point. Depending on how the game goes,
how are you going?
Dembele may get.
How are you expecting the game to go?
It's interesting because really, at one level, the only thing that we've got to go on, kind of like historically, is what happened at the Cup semi-final last year. And both clubs have made quite a number of changes since then. But actually, I think that Rangers are going to probably play quite similar to the way that they played in that semi-final. Whereas I think Celtic, because we were all taken aback that day by Celtic's performance.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're more likely to see a continuation of the Celtic that we've seen from the first part of this season. You know, that comes out really, really quickly, that closes opposition players down when they've got the ball, but not only that, moves at pace and attacks at pace. So, you know, I think in those first 20 minutes or so, if we see Celtic scoring in those first 20 minutes, then actually I think that would be the platform for a fairly comfortable win. And even if the opposition get a goal after we've maybe gone 1-0 up like Aberdeen did, it's pretty clear that Celtic have got so much more confidence and so much more ability within the team to actually kind of counter those brief setbacks. So,
and that's the thing that Brendan Rodgers has talked about being working on with the players. There will be points in games where things don't go for you.
Yeah.
And reminding them of their qualities and abilities. But I agree with you in relation to the scoring situation. If we score early, one of the points I keep making that Rangers, I think people know this in the press, but nobody actually wants to say it. Rangers have signed the equivalent of Wayne Biggins and Andy Payton.
That's what I was going to come on to, because I've heard some of the pundits this week, and there's almost this kind of like tendency for them to actually kind of say, well, we've got a Celtic squad there, we've got the Rangers squad there, so let's start making almost kind of like equitable comparisons between the quality of the players from the two squads. And you try and take out your own biasness when you're evaluating these things, and you actually say to yourself, well, hang about, Celtic have been signing players from the English Premier League and from the high end of English football. And okay, you can say, well, it's a bit of hype around that, but Rangers have been signing players largely from League One, League Two sides.
Yeah.
You know, and I heard somebody talking this week about the fact that who's the guy, what's his name? There's a guy called Forrester who plays for Rangers. And I actually had to Google him it was the game where he should have been sent off for two yellow cards.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know the first thing about him.
Yeah.
So I kind of Googled him and looked him up. And I think he wasn't playing regular first team football, but I think he was playing for some lower level championship team. Now, I watched him in a game, and he obviously is one of those players who, just to look at the cut of him, he can't believe that he's signed for a club now where he's playing in front of 40,000 people for home games, and you could tell that in his demeanour, because it was almost unprofessional of him in terms of some of the things that he was trying on, because he thinks, oh well, I'm at this club now, so I've made it. And I kind of compare that with the likes of Scott Sinclair, you know, who's had, okay, he's had some downtime in his career, but overall, he's made a huge, huge impact, you know, at various clubs that he's been to, you know. He's got the adaptability and convertibility to move from being a classic striker to being a wide man who can cut in and score goals. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm trying to look at this objectively and say there is absolutely no comparison between those two players in terms of their overall ability and competencies. But this is what the media do before all these games. They're not really interested in a proper evaluation. What they're interested in doing is welding these two entities together and say, do you know what? There's nothing between these teams.
And
because that's safe, and that's what sells newspapers, correct, pretty much.
And you can see this past week how much they have missed Celtic playing a team from Ibrox.
Yeah.
And I do understand in this changing media world with falling newspaper sales, anything that gives them a wee boost. You know, it's like running a marathon and suddenly somebody giving you a bag of jelly babies to give you a sugar rush, to give you a bit more energy. You know, it might not be your favourite sweet, but you'll take it because you need to get there. I understand why they want it, and as you say, towing the, in inverted commas, party line of Rangers of the same club to ensure that they don't alienate that section of the potential buying public. Mm-hmm. And then saying these two teams are neck and neck on ability also. Yeah.
But it's like what the media are doing is, it's almost like they're erasing the history of those players who've been signed by Rangers this season.
Yeah.
And saying, well, actually, overnight, because they're now wearing this blue jersey, then, you know, they're on a par with Celtic because there's a Celtic versus Rangers game coming up. And it's actually ridiculous. Now, the only thing that I would say to caveat that, sometimes on the day, you know, the team that has the poorer quality players actually comes through and gets a result.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, there is a possibility that that might happen tomorrow. But, you know, let's have some honesty about this.
Well, we will see tomorrow. I wanted to keep this not too long a podcast.
Yeah, that's
so,
fair enough.
So my final thing is your prediction for the score.
Well, I mean, I can see Celtic scoring goals, certainly against the defence that I've seen in the couple of games I've watched of the opposition. So I'm going to go for 3-0.
Do you know, I get laughed at on Radio Scotland last night. Now, it gets back to if we score early, and I'm not saying this will be the score, but I get laughed at because I said Celtic winning 5-0 or 5-1 is 50-1.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think that's not a bad bet.
It's not outside the realms of possibility. When you see, you know, okay, I know we got two late goals against Aberdeen, but at the end of the day, the statistics tell you that Celtic scored 4 goals against Aberdeen in that game.
Mm-hmm.
They scored 5 goals against Motherwell. They scored 4 goals against St Johnstone. These, you know, for me, every Celtic game now that I've seen this season under Brendan Rodgers, you know, the team has got goals in it.
Yeah, I mean, as we've said, you know, we could have a goal chopped off, hit the bar, hit the post, and then they could get a shot of the balloons off somebody's backside and go into the back of the net.
Mm.
These things happen.
Yeah.
But it would not surprise me for us to score 4 or 5 goals.
No.
Who's going to be the goal scorers then if we get these goals?
I think if Griffith starts, then, you know, the odds on Griffith scoring are kind of solo. So if he plays, then he's likely to get a goal. Scott Sinclair has looked as though he's got a goal in him in every game. So if I was to pick three goal scorers tomorrow, I'd probably go, and on the basis of the team that I picked, I'd go Griffiths, Sinclair and Rogic.
Okay, Griffiths, Sinclair and Rogic.
Are you writing all these down for your bets?
I am, yeah. I'm just filling the line just now.
Yeah, and then you'll be on to blame me, won't you?
Yes. I'll be suing you for a refund if it doesn't come through.
Yeah, I'll be on your creditors list.
Yeah, and then I'll set it up to, and then I'll come after you, and you'll be a new holding company.
A whole boy's been liquidated.
Oh, there's a few twists and tails in that yet. Anyway, with that, Hull boy, I will say thanks very much.
Cheers, Harry.
Cheers.
Enjoy the game tomorrow.
You too.
I never sit and go and think we've reached the peak. We've not reached the peak of it. Still to come. Place we all know, the land
of make-believe. I move on from Rangers. I will leave it in the hands of people that I think have got the best into the club.
David Murray has been overly reckless, and this club is in real trouble, dire trouble, dire trouble.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
What's
the main priority of the day?
Main priority is to win the match today.
Rangers introduced tax avoidance schemes to support their big money contracts. This would come back to haunt Rangers.
Sail my yacht, he's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny.
The big house must stay open. That's the bottom line.
Save me, save me, save me from this squeeze.
And you know, when you look back at it, I like these two names, Dick Advocaat and Sir David Murray, along with something like Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, tilting at windmills on the assumption that they were too big to fail. Or, conversely, Laurel and Hardy, if it weren't so tragic.
Hello, good afternoon. Rangers Football Club, one of the most famous in Britain, has announced it's gone into administration.
140 years of history. Just start again now.
Telling tales of drunkenness.
Worried, sir. It's a big embarrassment to the club. I think Mr. Murray and Mr. Bean have got a lot to answer for. I've just seen it somewhere else. It's not just the history of the club. It's just the families that come here together.
Are you pretty upset?
Well, give me two good reasons why I ought to stay.
Is there a threat of Rangers going bust and going out of existence?
Obviously, absolutely not.
Where's this money? I mean, it seems to have just completely disappeared.
We're heading in the direction of liquidation.
Save me from this queen.
than that little Google glass. Take me, and I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life. The football continues, but there is a break in tradition. It will be a new Rangers.
Net debt, 82 million. 82 million to net debt.
Well, last night we got a £29 million offer for Hooper. From an unknown agent, from an unknown club, from another universe.
Enjoyed the podcast with Hullboy there, discussing all things coming up in the game against the new Glasgow Rangers and other bits and bobs. Thanks to everybody who's been sending in the podcast recommendations. I'm trying to get this podcast out tonight, which is the Friday before the Rangers game. But in order to do that, I need to get my finger out and I don't have time to go back and check, because I've been so all over the place with the amount of recommendations that I don't want to do double recommendations. So there'll be no podcast recommendations today, only because I need to get myself organised and look at what I've already recommended, which I think is Hunters. If you want to get in your new music, it's podcasts@celticunderground.net. If you ever want to write something for celticunderground.net and get it published, just email in podcasts@celticunderground.net. In fact, if you want to do anything to do with the site, to tell us it's good, bad and different, tell us to not go on Radio Scotland or ask to go on Radio Scotland again, whatever, podcasts@celticunderground.net. Have a look on the New York Times. I'll be posting a link to St Anthony's interview that got me across there. We are everywhere. Celtic fans, New York is green and white, thanks to St Anthony. Anyway, Celtic FC Foundation stuff. The Celtic FC Foundation continues to deliver a variety of community projects which focus on priority areas of health, equality, learning and poverty. And you can get involved in anything. They have recently launched the 2017 overseas trip to Malawi. They're looking for volunteers for that trip. Return flights between Heathrow and Blantyre, Malawi, with Ethiopian Airlines, Sunday, June the 4th, and departing back to Glasgow Thursday, June the 15th. Return coach travel between Celtic Park and Heathrow, with accommodation over there. Work placement provided by Celtic FC Foundation via Mary's Meals. Travel to and from, volunteer placement on a daily basis, safari day trip. Total cost is £1,498. Deposit is required by the end of September of £289.60, with the balance paid 12 weeks prior to going. Minimum charitable element to be paid to Celtic FC Foundation by 19th of June is £1,000, which continues the work to support the work done by Mary's Meals. If you want to do that, you get in contact with Celtic FC Foundation. If you want to do anything with the Celtic FC Foundation, they've got the sleep out coming in November, which I need to sign up for in the next couple of days. I'm doing that. There's also the Girls for Good, the golf day, and if there's anything you want to do for charity and just raise funds for the Celtic FC Foundation, you can do. Anyway, enough of me. That was him, Hullboy, with me, get it right way round, Harry Brady, and this is me saying God bless and good night. Good night. All you want to do is ride around, Sally. All you want to do is ride around, Sally. All you want to do is ride around, Sally.
wiping those weeping eyes. Bought you a brand new Mustang. It was 1965. Now you come around signifying a woman, and you won't let me ride. Mustang's selling now, baby. Guess you better slow that Mustang down. You've been running all the town. Ooh, I guess you gotta put your flat feet on the ground. All you wanna do is ride around, Sally. Wiping those weeping eyes.